Welcome to Advanced Nuclear, the official podcast of UCAN Power, where leading experts, innovators, and policymakers explore the latest developments shaping the future of nuclear energy.
Welcome, everyone, to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Howe, on behalf of the United Coalition for Advanced Nuclear Power. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, and we advocate for the deployment of safe, clean, and reliable advanced nuclear technologies. In this podcast, we'll talk to leaders from industry, government, and academia about securing America's energy future by bringing new nuclear technologies to the civil power market and for bolstering our national security. We'll speak truth to power and cut through the hype to understand the benefits, the applications, and the challenges for advanced nuclear technologies here in America and around the world. In previous episodes, we've talked about the advanced reactor and nuclear fuel technologies that hold such promise for the future. But the industry runs on people, and that's what we're here to talk about today. We'll explore workforce development, community support, and the human dimension of expanding advanced nuclear technologies across the nation. Our guest today is the multi-talented Dominique Cooper, who is a passionate advocate for all things science, technology, engineering, and math. She's a businesswoman, a writer, a motivational speaker, and a reality TV star, which is a first for this podcast. But Dominique's roots are in nuclear. After graduating from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville with a degree in nuclear and radiological engineering, she earned a master's in systems engineering and electrical engineering at the historic Tuskegee University. Dominique has worked as a systems engineer for two major utilities and has spent several years in the space industry as well. She's the ultimate optimist, a truly positive force of nature, and has been called the global encourager. And we're thrilled to have her exuberant optimism be part of this podcast. So Dominique, thank you so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It is an absolute pleasure. Always have fun talking to you. So
great. Let's get started. Let's start at the beginning. What attracted you to study nuclear engineering at UT Knoxville?
I absolutely love this question because you know I get it a lot. I have always been drawn to solving big, complex challenges that I'd say eventually became centered around greatest impact to society. Now, the story is, I think, Jim, we talked before, a small country town girl from Alabama, and I love challenges. I knew that I was going to major in engineering at some point because math and science came extremely easy to me. I really didn't have to study in high school. Now, college changed that, but it was an easy a thing for me. And originally, I was going to major in computer engineering. But then I got on the phone with my academic counselor at the University of Tennessee, and she said, "Hey, I know that you're probably looking into computer engineering. Are you like solid on that?" And I'm like, I sort of, but not really. Like, I'd love to hear you out." And she said, "Well, if you decide to consider nuclear engineering, you could qualify for in-state tuition." And I forgot the name of the program that they were leveraging, but I was like, "Okay, I'll look into it." But she said, "Here's one thing you must know. It is the most challenging discipline at the College of Engineering here at UT." Now, Jim, if you want to see me get excited and enthusiastic and literally go after something, all you have to say is that it's challenging. And so she said that, and I said, "I don't have to do any research. Count me in." And so that was really my decision-making tree around studying nuclear engineering. But, you know, as I spent more time in the industry, met people, learned about like what is the heart of the industry, I realized that nuclear is like one of the few technologies that can provide clean and reliable power. And I think we both believe and know and understand that is something that the world, our world, desperately needs, especially right now. Now, when I studied nuclear engineering at UT, I realized firsthand how nuclear, you know, it isn't just about power plants. Although I have, like, that's my background. I did a little co-op and also intern with an industry company and then also with the NRC. And I realized quickly that it was more than just power plants. It's about innovation. It's about national security. And now we're hearing more and more and more about space exploration and even the medical advancements. I had an opportunity to do an internship in the medical field as well while I was studying at UT. So I realized that, hey, this opportunity is absolutely amazing. You have these intersection of many fields, and it also enables you, if you desire to, make a real difference in the world. And I'd say that's what really not only brought me into the industry, but kept me into the industry, both directly and indirectly.
Yeah, that's terrific, and I agree totally on the societal benefits of all this. And it's interesting because the U.S. has, you know, pledged to triple nuclear power worldwide and now domestically, you know, in the next 25 years. But that means that we're going to have to create, the estimates are about 375,000 new jobs just to kind of support that sort of expansion. So really a two-part question, you know, with your expertise, you know, are we on track to really triple our nuclear capacity? And can we develop the workforce to support it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Jim, right now, I'd say we have the ambition. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for ambition. I'm an optimist, as you mentioned earlier. But I think execution is going to be the real challenge. The U.S. has about 92 nuclear reactors running today. And I think they provide, what, Jim, close to 20% of our electricity. I hope I got those numbers right. But if we want to, if we're planning to triple that by 2050, we have to start moving faster. That's the reality. And what I've seen, not just in media, but, you know, from friends and family who actually still work in the nuclear industry. I have an uncle that is heavy into it. I have a cousin that's heavy into it. Got their reactor licenses. And it's one of the biggest bottlenecks is going to be the workforce development piece, which, you know, is a passion of mine. When we talked earlier, it's clear that we need engineers, we need technicians, we need welders and operators. People forget like how important, you know, the technicians and the welders and the operators are, but we need them. And I like to say faster than the speed of light. Just kidding. But just emphasis on the fact that we need that expertise right now. And we need to ramp up on the workforce pipelines to get people trained and ready to hit the ground running. Because that's one of the things that I really enjoy about training and certifications and just education in general, right? Like, it should be tailored around enabling people to hit the ground running, right? Like, to add value immediately on day one of their jobs. I think I read somewhere, no, actually, this question, right? We talk about 375,000 workers that are needed in nuclear over the next few decades, but I think I read this somewhere. I think the number now, Jim, is like 68,000 workers. That's unreal, right? Like, that's a huge gap when you really think about it. And not to get into cultural, but like, there is definitely a need for a bigger, a larger cultural shift. Where, you know, we apply the comms, we apply the marketing, we make it completely and abundantly clear, so that nuclear is a top career choice for young professionals and people looking to make a career change. You know, those looking to switch it up, there's nothing wrong with switching up mid-career. And this industry is, like, I would say, more of a safe industry to do that. And I have to do a shameless plug here, Jim, because this all ties into what I'm establishing. And that is on Atoms with Eve. It's a YouTube pilot series that, you know, I'm working on. And in that pilot series, we're not just planning to talk about nuclear energy. We want to show young people, and what I'm terming is career switchers, why nuclear is the place to be. You know, if we don't inspire and train the next generation, our ambitions will just be a strong desire to do something. We got to put the work to it, right?
Right. So talk a little bit more about that. Is that something that's just a concept at this point, or have you gotten traction on this series? That'd be a fascinating thing to have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I would say it's in the conceptual phase right now. I would say the idea originated from the fact that we both know that nuclear energy is making a comeback. But most people, I say huge emphasis on young people, aren't necessarily hearing that story in a way that's effective. And that's why I decided it was important to create On Atoms with Eve. And as we talked about earlier, you know, there's over 100,000 jobs opening up in the nuclear industry, and we need those engineers, we need welders, we need operators. And if we don't show people what's possible, we'll never fill that gap. So it's about bringing nuclear to life.
Well, that's a terrific initiative, and we look forward to that kind of, you know, coming to fruition. But you've mentioned, you know, these different types of job. A lot of folks don't understand that it's not just nuclear engineers and nuclear physicists. It's everything all the way down the supply chain, you know, to the people that do the welding and the people who maintain, the people who you know, do the electrical work, that sort of thing. I mean, could you expand on that a little bit? You know, you've been around this industry for many years. You know, what is the breadth of the type of jobs that nuclear creates?
Well, I am, and I'm just going to foot stomp this as well. I'm a huge believer that there's something for everyone in nuclear. We don't admit anyone in this industry. We invite everyone and all people, right? So, and I say that not just based on my experiences either. I mean, like if you're an engineer, there's design, reactor physics, which is really cool. Fuel cycle management. If you are a hands-on person, you know, like I am hands-on as well as like a really cool balance. You have skilled trades like welding, machining, and plant operations. And what's I would say, maybe I shouldn't use the word fascinating. What's interesting about like the nuclear industry is that there are specific certification and training. Like you got to have special training to just do welding in a nuclear power plant. It's not like just your general welding, right? Like you have to be trained on what the implications are when you walk into a nuclear power plant and decide you're going to do some welding or machining. You know, we also need business development professionals that's also, you know, in my background to be able to communicate, sometimes in a technical way, but also generally speaking, what we're doing and why it's important. Cybersecurity experts are definitely going to be needed. We also need policy analysts. The opportunities are endless, Jim. And I also want to mention the training piece, because I think sometimes, I'm just assuming that sometimes when people hear nuclear, not just people who are going to acquire a 4-year degree in nuclear engineering, but like, you know, those 2-year degrees or, you know, those certifications and training, they probably get a bit intimidated by that. But the training is different based on your role. So engineers need degrees, that's true. But operators and skilled trades generally go through certification programs. Sorry about that. And sometimes, you know, that could take only 2 years.
And then you're in the business. And these are all pretty well-paying jobs, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So what do you think? Is our university system, are the technical colleges and the, you know, the certification institutions, are they able to keep up with the increased demand as we expand the nuclear footprint here in America? Or is there more work that needs to be done there?
Oh, definitely. So universities like UT, yes, they have strong, UT has a strong nuclear program. But we need more programs. We need people who are enrolling in those programs that graduate. We need investment from community colleges and trade schools. As I mentioned earlier, Jim, I'm from Alabama, and my aunt is the associate dean at a community college. And I'm just always amazed at how the leaders at her school, including herself, are committed to ensuring the students have adequate resources, support, and a diverse set of academic tracks to pursue. Now, I was thinking we need nuclear to be one of those tracks, because one major gap, as we've talked about earlier, is that hands-on experience, internships, co-ops, and partnerships with industry, you know, they should be expanded, made available to students so that they can graduate ready to work. It goes back to hitting the ground running. I think another gap that we should definitely mention is, you know, as someone who has an enormous passion for branding and marketing, I gotta say, nuclear needs better marketing. If we want hundreds of thousands of new workers to meet that 375,000 workers that are needed by 2050, we need to make the field more exciting. It needs to be more accessible. People need to see it and hear about it a bit more than they are today. And we also need to spend more time in small, aggressive towns like where I'm from. We need to spend more time at high schools, kind of gearing them up for, you know, or building that interest in nuclear. We need to also start not only investing more in universities, but how about we truly partner with community colleges, because we need that expertise.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to work for a company that had a large uranium enrichment operation in southern Ohio. And you'd think it's rural, it's, you know, farmland, it's at the edge of Appalachia. And you could not find a better educated and supportive community when it came to everything nuclear. They just loved it. You know, good paying jobs, but these people took it very seriously. You drive through town and there was the Atomic Credit Union. I'm not making this up.
Oh, nice.
And there's a big sign as you entered town that said, you know, thank you to the name of the company, you know, for, you know, providing the jobs. It was pretty amazing kind of rallying about of the community about this great kind of job creator. But more importantly, they understood it was important work. It delivered clean energy for the nation. But that's a really big part of this as well, is, and we'll get to the, you know, communications piece in a minute, you know, for the industry, but the community buy-in, you know, for nuclear energy projects, you know, there's a lot of communities now that are going to be new to nuclear. Kemmerer, Wyoming, for example, is where, you know, TerraPower is going to deploy their first Natrium reactor, a very large project, a terrific operation that's going on out there. But they've never done a nuclear plant in Wyoming, so this will be a first. I mean, how does the public in general feel about nuclear power? Do you see differences between young people, old people, middle-aged people? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it depends on who you ask. You know, if you talk to someone over 50, they may still think about Chernobyl or TMI, right, and feel a bit uneasy or bothered. But younger people, I think, are they called like Gen Z, Gen X, Gen Z, Gen Z? I'm a millennial, but I think Gen Z and millennials, I think we see nuclear as a climate solution as well. And Jim, please correct me if I got my data wrong, but isn't it true that 80% of first time voters supported nuclear?
Well, I hope so. I don't know. That sounds like a good number to me.
Yeah. I mean, like, let's really think about that. Like, let's internalize that. That's huge. I would like to say, hey, the young people, they know something, Jim. They really do. And we should probably start listening. I think they understand that if we're going to be truly serious about clean energy, we can't just depend on wind and solar. Nothing against wind and solar, but we need nuclear, too. And I again, you're probably going to hear this throughout all of my answers, because I think this is a part of the problem. It's most people still don't know the facts about nuclear. They just don't. And again, I mean, we're talking about On Adams with Eve. On Adams with Eve. That's a part of my goal. I definitely want it to be more educational. And if we don't tell our own story, then fear and information is, it's going to fill the gaps. And Jim, I'm not a fan of fear. It has an annoying habit of standing in the way of accomplishing both things that are possible and impossible. So, you know, I try to conquer fear at every level if I can.
Gotcha. So if there's a community that's now likely to host a nuclear project of some sort, whether it's a small modular reactor or maybe a fuel fabrication facility, you know, how do you go out and convince that community that's a good thing to have? I mean, what are the basic arguments you make, and what do you expect as pushback? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So transparency and engagement, you have to start there. You have to be transparent, and you also have to understand what it means to engage, because in some parts of the states, your level of engagement has to be shaped on how the community will receive it, right? Like, because some communities won't receive the same information with the same tone, with the same delivery as another community. So you have to know and understand how to engage with your community, the community that you are hoping to gain buy-in from. And if I were to put it simply, you got to be real. Communities need to understand what nuclear is going to bring to them. What are the benefits? Yes, we can talk about what the risks are, because I think some people lead with that way too often. But we also have to put that same energy, if not more, towards highlighting the benefits. People want jobs. Like, that's the reality, especially in this current political space right now. People want jobs, and they want to grow economically. And I'd say probably most importantly, they want that stability that comes from growing economically. So we have to bring them into the conversation early. Now, Jim, everyone appreciates an invitation. I know even if I'm probably not going to be a part of the book club, at least invite me, you know, you know, we can show them how safety or how safe the nuclear industry is and how that's prioritized, but we have to give them the real benefits, the things that speak to what's going to impact their household, like local workforce training programs. And then I don't see a lot of this, or I haven't, maybe I've been looking in the wrong place, but it's like, you can have those workforce training programs. That's great. We need them. But I think it should be coupled with wealth building programs as well. So that, you know, the people that are going to be coming into this industry, welders, technician, plant operators, they need to understand how to smartly manage their income, because the income from nuclear jobs is quite competitive. They need to be taught how to smartly manage their income so that they can build wealth for their families and for generations to come. And so what happens, Jim, in those communities is that the people, the leaders that live there, they become partners instead of opposers. And I want likers and lovers. I don't really care for the haters.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I've got two takeaways from what you just said, and I agree totally with both of them. One is, you've got to be real. That makes a lot of sense. You know, there's nothing worse than kind of over-promising and under-delivering,
right?
Or maybe giving half of a story and not the full story. And then that goes to the transparency part. You know, it's the great disinfectant. You know, if you are shining a light on something, you know, making it transparent so people really, truly understand. And I think you mentioned also, you know, the early engagement and kind of broad engagement. You go in and you talk to people, and you don't try to hide from them. Is really important. You know, that's what they've been doing at many of these projects. You know, if you go out to Kemmerer, Wyoming, you know, TerraPower has invested a lot in that community. They're helping them do a lot of things to help with, you know, housing issues and, you know, water supply issues and all that. And they've been very well received. I think they've done a really remarkable job just, you know, getting with the community in a partnership rather than some sort of, yeah, we're just going to come in and do our own thing. So, you know, kudos to them. But I think we're going to see a lot more of that. The other thing I'd just point out is, we've got a lot of new reactor designs that are, you know, pretty much fence line, borderline safe. In other words, you don't have to have a 10-mile safety zone around the reactor because the reactor itself is not pressurized, or it's a sodium-cooled reactor or whatever, where you don't have any real threat of any sort of radiological incident. And that's going to take some getting used to, I think, as some of these companies like TerraPower and Oklo and Arc Clean Technology and Allo that are doing like the sodium reactors, as they come online and kind of show the world how safe they are and how just intrinsically safe these types of technologies are, it'll be a new paradigm, I think, because right now people think of the Simpsons, we all hear that,
right?
Nuclear safety. And the fact is, you know, even like the AP1000s that are coming online, which are amazing technology, they've got a lot of inherent safety characteristics that really make them just a wonderful addition to any community. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I rambled a little bit.
Oh, no. I think you perfectly covered it, actually. It goes back to the educational piece, right? Like, just making sure that the community understands. And if they ask questions that lead to a technical explanation, make sure you're prepared to break it down and really dispel those fears and misconceptions that exist around nuclear, right? Like, you know, go through examples of what it could mean if something not so favorable were to happen. Like, what would it mean for their homes? What would it mean for their community? What would it mean for their families? So yeah, I mean, it's really good to see that Terra is making those investments the right way.
Yeah, it's terrific to see. Now, you mentioned that, you know, the industry itself, you know, writ large, needs to do a better job just kind of talking about itself and explaining these things. Do you have any ideas what needs to be done here? I mean, I love the Adams with Eve. I mean, that's going to be a great series. Can't wait to see that roll out. But what else could we in industry be doing to kind of move things forward?
I can't emphasize this enough, Jim. We definitely need better storytelling. Invite people to share their own personal stories. And that could mean that you solicit support from, you know, areas that, or from people in communities that live close to an established area that has a power plant, and invite, you know, make them a part of what I'm going to call the road show, right? Like, invite them to tell their stories and what it has meant, you know, for their families, what it has meant for their communities. Like, you know, when you really go into a power plant, having that long-term financial or economic stability, you know, that feeds into bettering the community as well, because you have those local taxes that are going to be additional funding for schools, for improving your roads. I grew up in a really aggressive area in Alabama, and the roads were not all that great. So to have an additional funding, you know, to put towards improving the roads and improving the schools and, you know, just really creating a better town or city for those that occupy it, I think would also be attractive.
You know, there's a great story out of Oak Ridge, Tennessee, which, as we know, is one of the real hubs of nuclear, you know, expertise in the nation. It's a wonderful locale. And, you know, there was a developer that wanted to put in a drag strip of some sort. And, you know, this is the South and people love their NASCAR. And he wanted to build this little oval track where you could have races on weekends, that sort of thing. And when they had held a public hearing, there was a lot of opposition to it, you know, noise concerns and traffic concerns, all the typical things you would hear of, you know, NIMBY, not in my backyard. And eventually the whole project went away. It didn't get the public support. But then about a year later, they had another developer come and said they wanted to build a nuclear fuel production plant in Oak Ridge. And they had the public hearing and there was not a single voice of opposition.
Oh.
So I think the lesson there is that if you've got a community that understands nuclear, that has, you know, kind of the expertise. And again, in Oak Ridge, you've got everything from the PhDs working at the National Lab all the way down to the welders and the electricians and everyone else that's involved. It's the full gamut. And that's a community that is one of many across the country that has really adopted nuclear as not just a great thing to have for societal benefits, but also for the community, to support the community. So I think that's where we need to get, is where kind of all these places need to be mini Oak Ridges, but it's a great, great role model for everyone to have. So,
well, yeah. And that, I mean, that could, you could use that as an example to then feed into your campaign, you know, when you go and pitch to communities about bringing, you know, nuclear technology to quote unquote their backyard.
Right. So if you're a high school student and you run into them on the street and they say, "Hey, I know you. You've got that Adams of Thieves show." And what should I be thinking as a soon to be high school graduate, you know, about the nuclear industry? What advice would you give that person?
That nuclear isn't just a job; it's a mission. I consider myself a mission evangelist, and I tell you, Jim, it took me a while to kind of niche down to, you know, what embodies all of the things that I've done and all of the things that I enjoy doing. And I was like, oh my gosh, right? Like, I'm a mission evangelist. And that's just someone who spreads an idea. They get people excited about it. And they inspire them to take action with tons of passion and enthusiasm. And my rule of thumb is, if I don't understand the mission and I can't find any passion behind the mission, then I really don't get involved. And so it's important for me to be passionate about whatever it is that I'm pushing, whatever it is, whatever idea that I'm advocating for, because I am, again, an advocate for making big ideas simple and relatable, because that's how you're able to get people behind that idea. You want to make sure it's very easy to get behind. So if you love problem solving, you are challenged by big challenges, like that is your thing, and you want to work in a field that's growing, that's stable, that's stable. You know, we're talking about Doge and all of the things that are happening right now. If you want to get into a field that's stable and it's growing and it comes with an immense amount of impact, this is totally for you. So I'd say my biggest advice is to stay curious. Never, ever, ever, ever stop learning. And if you can opt in for hands-on experience early, then don't be intimidated by the technical side. I mean, the fact is, again, I said this industry is very welcoming. We need people who are thinkers. So come join the team. Come be a part of this industry. We need people like you.
And that applies not just to the high school student, but also to a mid-level professional who's now looking at nuclear and saying, maybe that's for me. I mean, it's the same advice you'd give, pretty much?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's you've got me all pumped up. But wait, I'm already in nuclear. So let me pivot.
Oh, Jim, Jim, you know what, since you mentioned, like, so for mid-career professionals, a thing that I want to note is, you know, sometimes when you're switching, you're doing a career switch, or, you know, you're having to pivot. I actually did a talk about pivoting. And it's so crazy because I was literally preparing the speech about pivoting. And literally a couple of days before I had to give the speech, I was presented with an opportunity to pivot. So I was like living it yet again. But the thing that I want to highlight is that sometimes when you are considering a mid-career switch, it could be potentially intimidating, or there could be some shame involved, right? Because you're like, oh my gosh, like, who am I? Now I got to figure this thing out all over again. I encourage people to not be ashamed. Like, don't even give shame any space, because the thing about the nuclear industry is that companies have retraining programs. So there's no need to feel ashamed. And what's interesting is this industry is regulated mostly for good reasons. And training is paramount, because even people who are occupying roles in the nuclear industry today, they still have to stay current on their training. So you'll always be training. You'll always be, you know, probably sitting behind a computer or in a class, making sure that you remember how to perform or what things mean, or if you're going to be transitioning to something new. So don't be fearful about having to enter into a certification program or undergo another retraining program. It's all for your good. And again, can't foot stomp this enough. The industry is growing so fast. So this is the time to jump in.
Oh, that's great advice. Now, let's pivot a little bit, because you not only have done a lot of work with nuclear and with the energy field, but you also have done a number of jobs in the space industry, of all things.
Yeah.
So now let's marry the two, nuclear and space. They come together. I know that NASA and DOD are pursuing some new capabilities for both, you know, nuclear thermal propulsion, nuclear electric propulsion for the Air Force, and also fission surface power to use on the moon or potentially for Mars. I think President Trump just said that we're going to go to Mars and at some point, which is great, but you need nuclear, right?
So you do. So,
yeah, talk about that. I mean, where do you see nuclear and space coming together?
So Jim, here's my disclaimer. I am not an expert in this area. However, I love it. I'm passionate about it. And I've seen it on both ends, right? Here's the reality. Bottom line up front, we cannot do deep space exploration without nuclear, period. If we plan on sending humans to Mars or we plan on powering lunar bases, we need reactors that can work where the sun doesn't shine, right? I mean, you talk about solar, I get it, but we need reactors, and we need them now. So here's the thing. You mentioned that NASA and then other private companies are, you know, making investments into nuclear propulsion and surface power. But I don't know, Jim. I get the impression that they're moving a bit slow. And I don't know, under the Trump administration, I don't know if that's going to like provoke like, you know, more funding, more policy change to enable faster growth. But we're going to need funding if we really are planning, you know, to do that. I believe we have the technology. I've read that we have the technology, but again, it's the funding piece and the policy piece that I think are paramount in pushing it forward. I not to harp on on Adams with Eve, but that's another reason why it exists, because most people don't realize how vital nuclear is to space exploration. I think people are excited about it, they're interested in it, but like when you throw nuclear into the mix, like what does that mean, you know, for the everyday person, or even for people who are like entertaining or like scratching the surface on the intersection of both. I mean, it's not just power plants on Earth. We're talking about getting to the next frontier. And if experts in this area are listening, please reach out to me. I love to capture their thoughts on this pilot. So I know it's a shameless plug, another shameless plug.
Well, you know, we're all into shameless plugs. That's fine. I will say that at the end of the previous Trump administration, the president issued a presidential, you know, directive that was the first ever that really focused on nuclear power and propulsion in space. It had been mentioned in previous policy documents, but it was the first one explicitly about that. And then kind of over the last 4 years, all the programs that DOD and NASA were pursuing kind of slowed down. I mean, they kept moving forward, but at a slower pace. So I'm hopeful that with, you know, President Trump back in office, you know, that his folks will, you know, get back to the pace that I think that he wanted to see, you know, 4 years ago. That'd be a good thing. I can tell you also that I couldn't agree more that, you know, we can fly by Pluto. We've done it. And that spacecraft that flew by Pluto literally had only hours to capture data from Pluto because it was going by at, you know, really fast speeds. It's still going in the same direction. If you were able to go out and actually orbit Pluto, can you imagine the amount of data you could get? But you can't do that with current chemical propulsion technologies. Back in the early 2000s, there was a project NASA undertook called Prometheus. They hired naval reactors, the same people that build the reactors for our nuclear submarines and aircraft carriers. They hired them to design a deep space 200 kilowatt electric nuclear electric propulsion system. Unfortunately, due to cost cutting and that sort of thing, and the loss of one of our space shuttles, you know, NASA's priorities shifted. But that program, had it ever come to fruition, would have allowed us to go and explore some of these deep space objects like Jupiter for months on end. I mean, in fact, they were looking to spend 5 years in among Jupiter's icy moons rather than just do flybys for, you know, months or weeks, whatever the limits of your chemical propulsion. So absolutely. And then, of course, you mentioned Mars and the moon. You've got to have some sort of, you know, fission reactor to provide the power, because otherwise you're just not going to have enough, you know, sunlight. You also have dust problems with solar power on Mars and the moon. I mean, the moon dust is, you know, very fine grained, and once it gets on the panel, it's going to be hard to clean off. So yeah, nuclear is the way to go, and hopefully these programs will, you know, get a, you know, a kick in the pants here with the new administration. But I'm glad to see you're an advocate of this, and look forward to seeing the episode on Adams with Eve about nuclear propulsion and power technologies. That'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, Jim, we'll have to have you on. And then we'll also have to just hope and pray somehow this podcast gets into the hands of Trump and his administration. Oh, gosh. Well,
we'll see what we can do about that. That would be nice. Now, I think that in general, you've really captured things where it's a very exciting time. We have a lot of growth going on with nuclear. There's a lot of just amazing companies out there that are, you know, putting themselves at, you know, capital risk. They're taking that capitalist challenge to try to create something and get it into the market and become profitable. And a lot of folks are really going out on limbs and doing a great job, developing their technologies. I just wonder if you had any kind of other issues you wanted to raise before we kind of wrap things up.
Yeah, so I think in our chat today, which has been absolutely fabulous, thank you, Jim. I think one thing that we haven't touched on is nuclear's role in national security. I think at our last conference, the conference that we had, I think it was the latter part of last year, right? We talked about how it's a national security risk, and having reliable power is a major strategic advantage because it ensures energy independence. What it does is, and you know this, Jim, I'm going to tell you this, but it's like for the listeners, it lessens our reliance on, you know, foreign energy sources. And then also it helps to strengthen our industrial supply chains. So as we look to scaling up in nuclear, we have to think beyond the energy piece and consider its complete, full, holistic impact.
Well, those are words of wisdom right there. And as you know, DOD's got a few projects underway for, you know, fixed site nuclear power. I personally think that those projects need to move quicker and that we need to do more of them because DOD, you know, has that resilience issue that they have to solve. You can't be dependent on a grid that can be hacked by the Chinese, or the Iranians, whatever.
Right.
If bad things start happening overseas. So you're absolutely right, Dominique, and thank you for bringing that up. Okay, so what's the one thing you'd like our audience to take away from this conversation?
Is everyone listening? I hope you're still listening. I hope you're still with us. Nuclear isn't a thing of the past. It's the future. When you talk about clean energy, when you talk about high-paying careers, when you talk about space exploration, nuclear is at the center of it all, and rightfully so. But here's the thing, if we don't invest in people, if we don't make the time and space to educate the next generation, to train our workers, to tell the real story, make it plain and clear and relatable, then I believe that this nuclear resurgence will stall. And that's precisely why I'm doing On Atoms with Eve. I mean, we definitely have to prioritize making nuclear more relatable, definitely building that excitement around it, and then speaking about it in a layman way where it is completely understandable and the next person can tell the next person about it. And it's a part of, like, you know, maybe not their daily conversations, but at least their weekly conversations. And, you know, to seriously open up the space, the venue for not just engineers, but for everyone. Because nuclear is all about us. It's about everyone. It's our energy, it's our economy, emphasis on our economy and our future. So I'll leave you with that. Hopefully that's a lot to take away, but just know that it is the future. It's not a thing of the past.
Words of wisdom. Thank you so much for that. I mean, really, really have enjoyed chatting with you. I mean, you really are a force of nature when it comes to these things. And I hope people take your advice, because it is terrific advice. And we're so glad to have you on. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And Jim, with respect to On Atoms with Eve, if there's anyone listening that shares the same passion, the same vision, or they just want to be a part of the movement, I'd love to connect with you. Doesn't matter if you're a student, doesn't matter if you're a teacher, if you're an industry professional or an organization, or just someone who wants to help spread the word, I'd love your support. So please reach out, Dominique Cooper, because it's really bigger than just a show. It's about inspiring the next generation to step into a field that I believe is shaping the future.
Super. And is there a specific way they can reach you? Is it through LinkedIn maybe? Or
Yes. Yes. If you can find me on LinkedIn, it will be under Miss Dominique Cooper, or you can shoot me an email at dominique.cooper@me.com.
Super. Well, Dominique, thank you so much. This was an enlightening conversation. It was a true pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for being so effective and enthusiastic about the nuclear power industry. Yeah, we really appreciate taking the time to be with us. And thanks also to our producer, the Olympic gold medalist of podcast, Ms. Kimberly, and to all the team at UCAN Power for their support. Please check us out on social media and at ucanpower.org. Until next time, thank you very much for tuning in to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast.